I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Oak Ridge Board of Education. I'd like to recognize the principal of the Oak Ridge Preschool, Ms. Lisa Downard, who will introduce our very special guest for tonight.
Good evening, Board of Ed members and our community and administrators. Thank you for having us here this evening. Tonight we have Ms. Shelton's four-year-old class here to, I'm sure, provide some entertainment for us. They're on their way in, so if you would please stand, they'll lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance first.
Attention, salute, pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag, the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, for liberty and justice for all.
Make it all.
Before they do that, there's no way we'll be able to top that, so we'll just cancel the rest of the meeting.
Okay, Madison.
Madison Lachey Ibe. Quincy Cojo Molly.
Kaylin Fritt.
Skylar Wisman Cruz.
Sophia Blakely Rose.
Look at them.
Zayden Johnson.
Caliber.
Hey, really didn't get a turn.
Caliber Jones.
He passed. Brantley Amelia.
Amelia Crabtree. And Bouchard.
Okay,
yay! Thank you, parents and grandparents and friends, for coming. And again, this is why we're all here. This is what it's all about. Let's give them another big round of applause. Next item on the agenda is the approval of the agenda. Do I hear a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Marshall, seconded by Ms. McLean. All those in favor of approving the agenda signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries unanimously. Next is special reports and presentations. First item is good news. We'll start with Mr. Eby.
Yes, my good news comes from Jefferson Middle School. Griffin Miller participated in the Tennessee Geography Bee and tied for fifth place out of the top 100 geographically adept students in the state. It's pretty awesome. In Jefferson Middle School, sixth graders Avery Parrish and Anshra Ajaz, along with former JMS student Kiri Nelson, won second place in the middle school collaborative category of the 9th Annual Dogwood Arts Festival Chalk Walk. They planned their piece for several months and spent 8 hours drawing it on the pavement at Market Square.
Ms. Eagle.
Well, my good news tonight comes from Houston, Texas, which was the site of the first robotics world championship this year. We had two schools made very good showings. Our Jefferson Middle School Master Builders actually placed first in the robotic competition. That is first in the whole world against teams from all over the world, taking second in programming. And the Oak Ridge High School Secret City Wildbots didn't make it to the finals, but they lost in the semifinals for their division to the team that eventually became the world champions. So that was a stellar showing by both schools, and we're very proud of them.
And we will be working to have those individuals come to a board meeting so we can meet them and thank them for their outstanding efforts. Ms. McLean.
My good news comes from Robertsville Middle School. The TSA chapter there completed their season while they were competing at the annual conference in Chattanooga. Robertsville students brought home trophies 4 first place finishes, 6 second place finishes, and 3 third place finishes. So that was wonderful. Also, Matt Kitts represented Robertsville at the state level of the 29th National Geographic Bee in Nashville. He competed against 104 other students from across the state of Tennessee. And finally, Robertsville librarian Scott Smith was unanimously voted to receive one of the 6 2017 Outstanding Educator Awards from the Humanities Tennessee Board of Directors.
And I'm going to add my good news to the last information that Ms. McLean gave you. You did hear her say that Scott Smith was selected as one of 6 recipients across the state for the Tennessee Humanity Awards. We had 2 others in our system that also received that award. So the Oak Ridge District had 3 of the 6 awards that were given across the state. The other 2, one was Julie Golden, who is a Spanish teacher at Oak Ridge High School, and the other is Mr. Ben Fowler, who teaches English literature and is heavily involved in the master's program as well at Oak Ridge High School. So congratulations to those 3 people. Ms. Marshall.
Yes, I have some good news from the district. Willowbrook, Jefferson, and Robertsville all achieved advanced STEM certification on April the 11th. That is a huge deal because that means that all of our middle schools, all of our elementary schools are all STEM certified. We're the first public school district in Tennessee to be certified that way with all those schools. Jefferson and Robertsville are the first middle schools in the state to be STEM certified. So congratulations to those schools, their students, and their staff.
And that's just some of the good news that's taking place in the Oak Ridge schools. Moving on, 2020 report, Dr. Borchers.
I'd like to ask Dr. Beckendorf to make her way to the podium. Tonight, as we talked about at the last meeting, we're going to report on goals 1, 3, and 4. So Dr. Beckendorf will start with goal 1, and then Mr. Lay and Mrs. Gagliano will co-present on goals 3 and 4. So I'll turn it over to you, Dr. Beckendorf.
Good evening. Okay, as a reminder about Oak Ridge 2020, what is Oak Ridge 2020 all about? Oak Ridge 2020 is all about achieving excellence in education in the various parts of what it takes to achieve excellence in education. So as we know, Oak Ridge is known for its academic achievements and the quality of its educational system. We believe that Oak Ridge schools and the quality of education here is an important part in why people choose to live in Oak Ridge. We want to continue this tradition of excellence in education and continue to aggressively pursue academic excellence and ensuring that all of our students and everyone who crosses our stage has a great future. So Oak Ridge 2020 was born from this desire to aggressively pursue academic excellence. It really, I think, is encapsulated with the phrase continuous improvement. Continuous improvement is the backbone of Oak Ridge 2020. It's a way of taking a look at what are we doing well, what do we need to continue to improve on in the various areas that we're studying. The strategic framework has guiding principles that it's all about the kids. It's all about responsibility. All means all. It's worthy of our best efforts. We need engagement. We need to do the right thing, and we need to have teamwork. So the 5 strategic goals of Oak Ridge 2020 are goal 1, academic excellence, goal 2, educator excellence, goal 3, learning environment excellence, goal 4, operational excellence, and goal 5, stakeholder excellence. So as you read the mission and vision and compare them to the guiding principles, you'll see that the guiding principles are interwoven throughout the mission and vision. Okay. So tonight we're going to start talking about educator excellence. We're not going to talk about every piece of educator excellence tonight, Right now, we're right in the middle of TN Ready testing. We obviously don't have our end of year results yet, and last year we only had testing at high school statewide. So we're going to talk about some pieces of the academic excellence that isn't as tied to the state testing this evening. But part of what we're trying to do under this goal is to take is to make sure that we're providing a rigorous education, rigorous instruction to all of our students. We need to close our achievement gaps. We need to make sure more and more of our students are achieving the 7 keys to college and career readiness. We need to make sure we're leveraging technology to enhance the learning environment, make sure students are ready for the technology in today's worlds. We also need to partner with our corporate business and community partners in order to enhance our career and technical education and STEM opportunities. We also need to promote social and emotional learning and provide a professional learning community environment. So there's a whole lot that's encompassed within Goal 1. So with all of that said, I want to start with some celebrations. The first celebration I want to talk about relates to Access Oak Ridge. I mentioned that just a minute ago about technology. Technology is important, and obviously we've talked about it many, many times here, but technology isn't really just about handing a device to every student. It's really about transforming education, helping students become more engaged in their learning, and preparing students for a world that has more and more technology in it. So we're very excited to kind of share some of the celebrations around Access Oak Ridge. So Lynn, if you don't mind playing the video, this comes from Jefferson Middle School. Do you mind making it full screen? It won't, okay. So we've discussed this many times here, but I think it's kind of neat to see what Access Oak Ridge looks like in students' hands. So far, we've deployed laptops to all of our students in grades 5 through 10, with grades 5 through 12 planned for next school year. Some of the other things we've done that have really helped with Access Oak Ridge is that we were able, because of the school board, we were able to hire a repair technician this school year. And because of the repair technician, and also because our IT department has become an authorized Lenovo repair location, our repair time has just improved incredibly this year. We also have help desks now in all of our secondary schools. So our students receive very quick personal attention with our Tier 1 technicians when they need it. And providing those durable cases that the devices sit in, and they don't actually really ever have to be removed, that's also improved or reduced our breakage rate. And again, that's just a piece of it, because that's just handing out the device. But when you think about how the students are engaged in their learning, the quick feedback they receive, how they're able to collaborate with each other, with people outside of the district, is really quite incredible. As a matter of fact, that ties into, do you mind advancing the slide? Thank you. That ties into, I believe it was Paige who was just celebrating the Advanced Ed STEM certification. We're very proud that our elementary and middle schools are now all Advanced Ed STEM certified. And one thing that was very interesting is that the people who came to visit Robertsville and Jefferson both said that their integration of technology was so incredible because the technology was truly transforming student learning. They did student interviews where they said, how do you like this? And students said they were so much more engaged in school, that the before and the after has completely improved the learning environment for them. And the certification, the people who came for certifications really gave kudos to both middle schools for that. So that was very rewarding. I also, though, underneath Advanced Ed STEM certification, want to mention our STEM coaches. Because we have STEM coaches in all of our schools, they're doing a phenomenal job of leading the way of how are we infusing STEM, not just in the traditional STEM content areas of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, but in many content areas. And in fact, many of the best projects we have are connected with humanities and the arts. Another celebration I wanted to bring up, which also ties into what Holly had done recently, is connected to increasing our post-secondary opportunities, which include dual enrollment, dual credit, industry certification, work-based learning, and advanced placement. For next school year, we're offering new courses such as dual enrollment accounting 2, dual enrollment statistics, dual enrollment pre-calculus, and post-advanced placement introduction to organic chemistry and biochemistry. We're also offering a computer programming pathway focused on cybersecurity at the high school with recommendations for additional early post-secondary courses in computer networking at Roan State. Another celebration related to professional learning communities is that ever since we have had PLC and data coaches working in each of our buildings, the level of collaboration in our collaborative teams has not only increased, but has become more refined. So we have people collaborating on creating assessments together, grading assessments together, analyzing their data, responding to student data in a way that that we really didn't see when we were just kind of doing PLCs on our own. So we are able now to use data to drive instruction on a student-by-student, classroom-by-classroom model. Moving to opportunities, we are really working on increasing our partnerships. We have some partnerships in place that are growing all the time. I just mentioned all the dual enrollment that we're doing. But one neat opportunity that we have right now is a partnership between Oak Ridge Schools, Pellissippi State, Roan State, the Oak Ridge Public Schools Education Foundation, and ORAL, working together to look for and write grants for the school system aligned with our strategic objectives. We have had memorandums of understanding in place. We've had our first meeting, and we're really excited about the prospects. And that's in addition to everything we're already doing. Related to professional learning communities, one opportunity that we noticed is that even though we have done a good job at getting PLC coaches and data coaches in our schools and working with them, we hadn't really been collecting data about how is this all going. And so part of Oak Ridge 2020 with that continuous improvement was really thinking about, well, how do we measure this? And so this year, for the first time, we're actually going to be doing a PLC activity record that will provide data from the group level, and also the individual member of the collaborative team will provide data so we can really see how are our collaborative teams working at each of our schools. And we're using rubrics based on the solution tree, who are the leaders in professional learning communities. So our strategies under goal 1 are access Oak Ridge, more than handing out a device. collection of evidence around our PLC activities, continuous improvement. I didn't really mention our continuous improvement committee. We have a district-wide committee that meets once a month that's composed of administrators, teachers, lots of different people with different perspectives. And we're always looking at data and thinking about what are we doing well and what do we need to do better. We also have a focus on PBL implementation. PBL stands for project-based learning, and that's really how we're doing the STEM portion of our STEM initiative. And again, we are growing partnerships to help us with our post-secondary opportunities. Should I ask for questions now, or should I turn it over to the other goals?
Either. Well, questions now probably would be okay. Appropriate. Mr. Eby.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Beckendorf. The report card that we have for goal one, in some areas match up here, some areas don't. I know you didn't report on all those, but the ones,
yes.
how do we, some of the ones that, you know, we're obviously looking to improve on our path, what kind of some of the actions are we taking? Can you address that?
Well, one of them with the project-based learning, I've addressed it just a little bit with the training and our STEM coaches, but part of it is just capturing the evidence. We haven't captured all the evidence from this year about the number of percentage of teachers who have been implementing PBLs this year, so I'll be able to report out on that in the fall. That's just an end-of-year number that we don't okay. have for this year.
And I also noticed, you know, we have what we had for 2015, 2016, and we
yeah.
have, you know, where we are right now, which is all great, but I don't see any targets for 2016, 2017.
Yeah, that's true for all of the goals, is that we're missing the targets on those for
okay.
all of the goals. So that's something we have to do across the system.
Okay.
You're correct. And you'll notice also for goal one under the district scorecard score, that one is really dependent on having our
sure.
end of year results.
I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay.
We'll move on to goal three and goal four.
Thank you, Dr. Beckendorf.
Okay. Looking at goal three, it's all about a learning environment of excellence. And let me get, is it that? Okay, here we are. And some sub-goals under goal three for a learning environment of excellence is to establish and maintain a comprehensive process that monitors the condition of capital assets and provides a basis for prioritization of capital expenditures. Also, developing a capital improvement plan that embeds cost and energy efficiency. Optimizing and communicating student services, including transportation, food, and other student services. And to develop and communicate strong safety and security policies, practices, and plans, and continuously assess performance. And looking at some of the celebrations under goal three, in the area of assessing our equipment and our capital assets, we do have an actual report that lists every piece of equipment, when it was purchased, its age, its expected useful life, how long we've had it, how it's been maintained. So we do have quite an extensive detailed list that actually feeds into the next piece, which is the CIP or the capital improvement plan. We also have feel that a celebration is our portion of the work on the ESCO project, which was identifying projects that would be promoting energy efficiency and saving funds. And we continue to work with the city on that to achieve funding and to identify which projects will make it during this first run. We also have a celebration in our food service department through the work of Jen Taylor and her introduction of innovative programs and very well managed fiscally her program. She's been able to increase participation, and we've been able to achieve a surplus at year end and replace much needed cafeteria equipment.
without having to spend general fund dollars on it. Another celebration is we have all of our buses are equipped with operable cameras and radios, and this is really important to principals and other administrators to be able to have access to this information. And we think that by not hearing a lot of complaints this year that we've improved in that area. I'm going to turn it over to, oh, I guess I need to keep going a little bit here. Still my turn. Okay, opportunities in this area. We would like to be able to increase the student participation in the free breakfast program at schools that are eligible. In our first year, we had about an 80% participation, which was good, but we really wanted it to be more. But it was kind of the first year and a few hiccups in operation, and so we worked with the schools to make it easier for them to deliver the service and for everybody to be fed. And we're happy to report that this year we have a 95% participation. So we're definitely moving in the right direction and serving a lot of students. We also have the opportunity to develop meaningful criteria to analyze the efficiency of our transportation service. We've spent a lot of time looking at this and trying to figure out what would be the best way to compare and to measure efficiency. We've looked at cost per student, cost per mile, and as we've compared state data and other districts' data, it's become really complicated because there are so many factors like size of your district and, you know, something like Rarity Ridge really extends our size, the number of miles we're driving. So it's still a work in progress, and that's why it's listed as an opportunity. Let's see. I think that's your turn here. I'll turn it over to Mr. Lay.
I'm going to back up for just a second. We missed one of our opportunities. Is he going to let me? Okay. We've had many, this is one of our celebrations. We had many positive changes have been made to our emergency response process. And once again, that's just another area. We've always had our emergency notebooks, and we always knew we had a plan, but we really have done a much better job preparing for that emergency. You know, when you think about some of the things that happened in this area in the last year, if you had mentioned us being prepared for a wildfire, we probably all looked at each other and said, we don't need to be prepared for a wildfire. At least that was my thoughts. And then after what happened in Gatlinburg, we realized that we need to be prepared for a wildfire. So that's a very worthwhile process. So that was one of our celebrations. Okay, if you go to number four, increase the percentage of staff members that have completed the required Safe Schools training. As I look at this document and I think, what does it mean to me? And I'll be honest, I was on the committee, and when the work first started, you know, it was very new to me and it was a learning process, but, you know, I was still trying in my own way, trying to say, okay, what is the true worth of this document? And right here is the perfect example. Did I hit that button again?
Move forward.
I'm sorry, I'm lost. Okay, go back, okay. Okay, anyway, this is a perfect example. When we got to looking, how do we measure how we're using our Safe School training? And to be honest about it, when we looked at it, we were not doing a very good job. We had a low percentage of staff who were really completing the trainings. And if it wasn't for something like the scorecard that really challenges us to reach for excellence, we would have possibly missed that. So keep in mind, we looked at those numbers, those were last year's numbers. We're doing a much better job this year, and we're making some changes. Also, we want to complete the work necessary to finish the emergency response application. We have an app that we're working on, and it will just simply allow every employee in the Oak Ridge school system to have better access to information that will be necessary if we have a true emergency. The strategies. Number one, finish the analysis on transportation efficiency. We have found this to be challenging. You know, we feel like First Student does a great job. We feel like we're highly successful. You know, bottom line is you're not seeing us in the newspaper, which is a great thing. But how do you truly measure efficiency? So we're working on that, and we will continue to work on that. Continue to develop and increase communication and understanding of the emergency response plan. Once again, we have a nice document. We've made tremendous improvement, but we can still do a better job communicating that information to all staff so that we're better prepared. and then revise the timeline and requirements of the safety videos. One problem we ran into this year, we do not require staff to complete the safety videos until the end of the school year. Well, here it is, this time of the school year, and we're thinking, okay, that last day of school, if a staff member has not completed that, you know, we're sort of limited in our response. So we're revising that, and we'll do a better job with that. So. All right, goal number four. And first of all, any questions on goal number three? Okay, moving right along. All right, goal number four, operational excellence. Okay, and basically, and I know our audience, they're not always familiar with these, so I will read these. Adopt and embrace a comprehensive, excellent framework for continuous improvement. Number two, create and implement a technology roadmap that encompasses application for the student business systems, operation, and infrastructure. Number three, utilize a performance management system that encourages collaboration, teamwork, and communication, and leads to improved organizational effectiveness. Number four, integrate business systems and processes to support shared data, seamless access, and data-driven risk-informed decision-making. Number five, create a strong, transparent city school alliance focused on financial resources and capital asset improvement. And number six, identify and pursue non-traditional revenue sources. Basically, our celebrations. Number one, we have a highly developed Oak Ridge 2020 scorecard. You know, and when I think about that, once again, we have moved from a concept, an idea, to basically a working document, and we are making progress on that. Secondly, our essential computer systems meet or exceed the industry standard for downtime, and our infrastructure was given a first-class rating by an independent audit. Back when we decided working to go one-to-one, you know, our question, you know, we had questions. We had never done that. We brought in LeanFrog. They were a great resource. The first thing they picked up on was our infrastructure was actually excellent. And they said it would support any type of one-to-one initiative we would do. Lastly, our competency in the use of E-Plan has increased. Our communication with the State Department, it's all done through E-Plan. And we started that a couple of years ago, and it was new, sort of foreign to us. We have come a long way, and basically we're doing a great job with our E-Plan. And I'll let Ms. Karen finish the rest of these.
Thanks. Let's see. Oh, there we are. I had notes on mine. Thanks. Okay, looking at Goal 4, celebrations continued. Again, this is measuring data from FY16. And our actual expenditures were less than the approved budget, actually 96.92%, so about 97% out of 100. And our revenue received was 103, about 102.8, 103% over the approved budget. So we want it to go in that way. We don't want it to go the opposite way. But we also monitor it throughout the year so that if there seems to be an excess, that can be utilized during the year that's being underspent and it's already budgeted for, then we've come to the board and looked at reassigning those funds to their best use or deciding whether we want them to fall back into fund balance for a future use for offsetting future budgets. So that's definitely been a celebration. We also received some non-traditional revenue sources that totaled $248,000. A variety of grants and contributions from the community and from local sources that we put to very good use. And we hope to continue to increase that number to extend our goals and our programs. And let's see. It's not going.
Point towards Lynn. There you go. Okay.
Okay. Looking at the goal for opportunities, I'll hand that over to Mr. Bruce.
Okay. Our opportunities, number one, provide devices for all students in grades 3 through 12. If you remember, last year we were grades 5 through 8. This year we added our 9th and 10th grade. And, of course, next year we want to be 5 through 12. Okay, so we're working to do that. Secondly, finish the key performance indicators for resolution time of help desk tickets for staff and student devices. I'm not sure about you, but when my technology doesn't work correctly, it doesn't matter how quick our tech department is, it's not quick enough, okay? Especially if it's one of those moments, all right? So, but we're trying to determine what is reasonable, okay? And what is a reasonable response time? So we're working towards that. Decrease the resolution time for completion of student and staff help desk tickets. Once again, just provide that service, get everyone up and running as quick as possible. Continue to work with the city to fund our identified CIP projects. We have a lot of things that need to be done, and unfortunately, it all goes back to money at times, and we'll continue to work with the city. Our strategies: continue to make student devices and software a priority along with the necessary teacher training for effective instructional usage. And we'll continue to say that we're not just content to put devices in students' hands. We want to make sure that our staff, our students basically have the training they need to where it is an effective learning tool. And then to utilize industry standards to finalize analysis procedures of the help desk resolution times. We want to be reasonable with our technology department and make sure our expectations, once again, would be reasonable with industry standards. Okay, do we have any questions about strategy four or goal four?
Well, not a question, but a comment. First, thank you for this information and the work that we're doing. And I think it's important that we all understand that when you look at the scorecard, we could be here, we could be here, or we could be up here. We not only have to realize what we have to do to move us here, but we also have to understand what we did to get us here and make sure that we don't move back this way by developing the premise that, well, we got here, so we're good. We got there by hard work and involvement, and we've got to continue to stay there and continue to find ways through 2020 that not only, as I said, help us stay there, but improve the ways that we do things to keep us there. So,
and it's also worth noting, Mr. Huntermark, every time we would work on this presentation, he would say this several times, and tell the board we have not set an easy scale. In other words, what we have done and that will enable us to demonstrate that we are being successful in demonstrating excellence, it is not an easy scale. And of course, we could have set it lower, but we have set a scale that, once again, if we achieve high scores in all areas, we're doing an excellent job. So it's worth pointing that out.
Mr. Eby.
Yeah, I just really think this is great. I was glad to see you talk about an example of how going through this process has helped you identify things that you want to work on and something that you've done that's improved the process. And as we go through it, we'll continue to do that. What I would like to do, Mr. Chairman, is at TSBA this fall is get this on the agenda to be a topic for a seminar that we would give from our school system as one of the topics. I think this would be excellent, much like what we did on the superintendent evaluation. And I'll even go a step further, and I would like to work with Dr. Beckendorf and you or whomever and actually write an article for the TSBA or something on what we're doing with regard to continuous improvement in this Oak Ridge 2020. I think this is something that many school systems could use, and I think, again, we're setting the model there.
We can certainly make both of those things happen.
And we would welcome that opportunity. And Dr. Beckendorf and I, we have both told Dr. Borchers a time or two, you know, he is a tremendous leader. You look at our scorecards, things we're doing, we need to put that out there because it's excellent work. And we're not always getting the credit that we should be getting with his leadership. And we should do that. So.
And I would add one other thing to that as a possibility. The Magna Awards, not looking for awards, but this is a way to put the information out. This would also be a perfect topic to submit to that organization that does those. So we'll add that to the list.
And to follow up on the presentation piece, we have had several people, staff members, apply to present at LEAD next year. And one of the presentations that we'll want to do is the keys in Oak Ridge 2020. So we will have some type of presentation put together already for that as well. And we'll continue to move.
Yeah.
And we'll continue to move forward. As Mr. Lay put the last slide up there, we're going to continue to make this scorecard complete and then come back to the board at a future point for next year to say, here's when we'll be presenting on these goals and at times that makes sense. So when the data comes in, so you'll be seeing these again.
And important to note at the bottom of the slide that we're looking at there that this strategic plan is available online. And people can go there and review it and see it if that's their interest. Thank you. Anyone else?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oops. Spread out.
Next, Dr. Borchers, I will again turn to you as we have some recognition for one of our outstanding educators.
All right, members of the board, I think we all know what an excellent educator and person Mr. Steve Reddick is, and we've got some people that would like to give an intro for him. And this first person, Dr. Marion Phillips, needs no introduction, and it was probably good timing that you saw our preschool students this evening. So I'll turn this over to Dr. Marion Phillips.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be here tonight for such a wonderful occasion, and I'm going to ask Steve Reddick to come up here if he would. The reason that we asked to be on the agenda, Steve didn't. Let me make that very clear. Steve didn't. But Randy Atkins, who is the Director of Development at the University of Tennessee for the College of Education, Health, and Human Sciences, and leads a committee that organizes, does the work for finding folks for the Educators Hall of Fame. Now, so we wanted to make sure that Oak Ridge was quite aware of this honor because it's the first time that a teacher, an educator at any level in Oak Ridge has been inducted into the UT Educators Hall of Fame. Hall of Honor. Hall of Educators. Hall of Honor. That's it. Tom Behan and I are on the committee, and even though I've retired and Tom is not at UT, we represent our community on this committee for finding quality educators to be inducted into the Hall of Honor. So I felt like it was very important, so did Tom, that we make sure that the recognition that Steve has earned and very fairly deserves was noted, and we are very, very excited that he is the very first one, but not the last one, from Oak Ridge that will be inducted into the University of Tennessee Educators Hall of Honor. Got it right that time. And I wanted to ask Randy Atkins to come up and tell you just a little bit about how the selections and what happens. And one of the things that's very close to my heart is that the committee, the money that comes in from the inductees and the nominations and all of that, goes not for the big celebration that we had last Thursday night, but for future educators. And that's my passion, future educators, getting them ready for the classroom. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Randy Atkins, Director of Development.
Thank you, Dr. Phillips. If you would like to pass one of those out to the board.
Well, thank you for having me. It is truly an honor to be in front of the board. And I suppose you could call this a Goal One celebration, in my opinion, seeing your educator excellence and the celebrations that go along with it. I think you could consider this one as well. So just to dovetail on what Marion said, the Hall of Honor, you have a program in front of you. There's a brief history at the very back of that program. This is the program we produced and passed out last Thursday night at a large celebration where we inducted seven excellent educators, not necessarily UT graduates, not necessarily classroom educators, but we've inducted coaches, we've inducted poets. Some of the other inductees in the past, Nikki Giovanni was inducted a couple of years ago, Dr. Joe Johnson several years ago, Dr. W.J. Julian, director of the Pride of Southland Band. So you get a sense of this being very well-rounded in its diversity of excellent educators and those that have had an impact in education. So the Hall of Honor started about 15 years ago by the dean of the College of Education at the time, Dr. Glennon Rao. And Dr. Rao and a couple of friends of his, colleagues of his, thought it was really necessary for us to have a way to recognize excellence in educators. They did not, again, keep it just to the University of Tennessee. It is open for anyone, anywhere. So with that said, I would like to present Stephen Reddick with the trophy, plaque, recognition item that will, again, signify his induction into the University of Tennessee Educators Hall of Honor. Steve, congratulations.
Well, first of all, well, it's hard to know how to say what I need to say because there's so much. And the other night, Thursday night, the inductees were basically not given the chance to offer any remarks, and that may have been just as well. And a lot of people, I told people it's like torture because somebody said, well, did you have your guitar? And I said, no, I couldn't sing a song either. So it was a bit of a strain. But the we had a really nice occasion at the Knoxville Downtown Hilton, and the introductions for each inductee were done by Bob Kessling, so he made us all sound like sports stars. It was really quite thrilling. But he worked from a biography that, you know, from resumes and biographies that had been sent in, and the occasion was really wonderful. My family came in from all over, from as far away as Washington, D.C. and Memphis, and was the Oak Ridge schools were well represented. Laura McLean and Fred were there. Mr. Philauer was taken away by the city of Oak Ridge that night, and but he made a personal visit to Jefferson on Wednesday to tell me that he wasn't going to be able to be there. That meant a lot because I had no idea that the city presence or the school system presence was part of it. I had been given instructions to have a guest list of 10 people, and I was at 22 when they finally said, okay. I kept saying, surely there's a budget on this thing. I said, just bring them on, bring them on, bring them on. So I had four tables worth of people, and they said that was the first time that anybody had been so greedy with the spots at this program. So, but the Dr. Henderson sent her regrets. She claims that she was stuck in Murfreesboro, but I've heard that line from her before, and I know exactly what that's code for. She was doing her toenails or something like that, I think so. But anyway, Mr. Cox was there, and Mr. Lay and Tracy were there as well. But I guess by way of getting to a few comments, I'll just say, you know, I guess first line that comes to me is, who knew that teaching 13-year-olds would be my ticket to the big time? But when I first learned of the nomination, it was back just shortly before Christmas, and I was literally speechless. And I know that those of you who know me know that that is about like Halley's Comet in terms of how often it happens. But it was only temporary, and I took a few minutes to kind of collect my thoughts, and I realized first that I've underestimated Mayor Behan's and Dr. Phillips' ability to be devious, because they pulled all of this together without any knowledge. And that was kind of what caught me so off guard, was I had no idea it was coming. So first of all, I want to say thank you to them, because it means a great deal. I also want to thank Randy and Dean Ryder of the UT College of Education, because without this whole program, it would not have been possible to be, you know, recognized in such a way. It really was the last thing I could see coming. My long-suffering, ever-patient wife could not be here tonight, but I think clearly she's part owner of this honor, having borne the effects of 32 years of endless lesson planning and paper grading and coaching and everything else that has brought me to this point. My two kids are now both successful professionals, but they've had to overcome their share of your dad stories everywhere they went. They stopped going to the grocery store with me just shortly after diapers, because my daughter says, you talk too much, Daddy. And they were very wise even at that tender age. I wouldn't be here without the Oak Ridge schools. Robert Moss first hired me after 2 days of interviews, at Jefferson Junior High School and SAB. This was back in the glory years when you put somebody through a 2-day gauntlet. Robert took a chance on me. I was living in Ireland at the time and working on a master's degree that was the Rotary Scholarship had provided me an opportunity. And Robert, this tells you sort of the scope of my career, and our STEM boys back here will laugh, but they know exactly what I'm talking about. Robert sent me a telegram. We started our conversation by telegram, and he was old school, but that was really old school even then. And then, of course, when I got hired, it was film strip machines and 16-millimeter projectors and how many prayers you had to say for so the film wouldn't snap. But Robert took a chance on me. I was not yet certified, and that could be done back in the day. You could be hired on a provisional certificate as long as you promised to get your coursework finished in 3 years, which I did. Really, I think for the first 15 or so years of my career, Robert shaped everything that I became in the classroom. Every day went in knowing that there was a standard of excellence and rigor that he expected. To the extent that I'm organized enough to lead the Williamsburg trip, I owe that to Robert as well, because he was a type A planner, and there were no details unanticipated, not like today with Mr. Cox can tell you. Mr. Lay, Mr. Cox, and our SAB administrators and you, the board, have continued to support me and encourage me over the years, not to mention employ me. And I know I wouldn't be standing here today if I didn't feel that support every day. My colleagues at Jefferson and in the Oak Ridge schools have been no less instrumental all across the system, but especially Jefferson. They've put up with me the most, and not just the teachers. I wouldn't be able to function every day without Felicia Story, Joan Haygood, and Linda Voorhees. And they're three of our support staff. And they know when I have that certain look in my eye that I need copies. And my bill of debt that I owe them I don't even want to start to speculate. But it really wouldn't have been possible without them. And I guess, I clearly owe them a great deal as well. They were all also there last Thursday night. And finally, my students. I'll say about 32 years worth of students, probably somewhere between 3,000 and 4,000 kids have crossed through my classroom door or been a member of the cross country or track teams. And there's no question they've given me plenty of challenges and a whole lot of laughter, a great deal of joy, but they also give me a lot of material to work with every day. A lot of my friends and my family's friends ask, how is he doing this? How can he teach middle school every day for 32 years? And I tell them, really helps if you're a case of arrested development yourself, which I consider myself one. You've got to have a sense of humor, clearly. You've got to have an incredible store of patience. And I also find sarcasm to be very helpful. And perhaps the key, the most definitive key, and I'll just go ahead and say this because I'm up here, is the ability to cuss in your mind without saying the words out loud. Absolutely critical. The last thing I just say, you just got to love these kids, because I remind them often that unlike their parents, I get paid to love them, and I love them more on the 15th and 30th every month than on other days. But each day, my goal is to just be present for them, to try to connect with them. And of course, there are millions of days where that doesn't happen. But I think, and you all know this, that we may well be the most sane and stable part of their day. And I just try to connect with them where they are and to let them know that in the middle of their crazy mixed up lives and selves, that they will get through middle school. It's an interruption on the way to an otherwise meaningful life for many of them. They've just got to endure. And that they can always come to my classroom and feel welcome and maybe even learn a little bit and laugh a lot, I hope. I want to thank Randy again. I want to thank the Oak Ridge schools, thank Marion and Tom. Thank the city of Oak Ridge for its support and encouragement over the years. This is a phenomenal school system to work with. And I think really these past few years have been a testament to the fighting spirit that the board has really set the bar high. Superintendent, the leadership has been phenomenal the past few years. And I'm not just saying that because I'm about six videos behind on my safe training videos. And with your permission tonight, Mayor Behan says, Steve, you don't have to stay. You need to get home and watch those videos so you have a job tomorrow morning. So thank you all for everything. I really mean it from the bottom of my heart. God bless. Thanks.
Steve, I would just add one comment of many I could add, but just one. Your dedication in the classroom is an example that all our teaching staff could live by, but your example that you set for other staff members is probably equally as important, and we appreciate that as well. Comments, Ms. McClain?
I was fortunate to attend the ceremony last week, and most of the teachers that were chosen to be in the Hall of Honor are retired teachers. And I think we are so fortunate to have Steve in our classrooms and also in our system as a teacher leader, and I'm glad he's around.
But don't get any ideas of what she just said right there, the fact that, you know, got to stack
up.
We'll get back to you. We'll get back to you.
Yours just got reduced.
All right, moving right along. Next on the agenda is the public forum. The public forum is for anyone who would like to address a topic that is not on the agenda. You may address a topic that is on the agenda when it is presented. If you choose to address the board, you will have 3 minutes to speak. The board may or may not respond to your comments or may direct the superintendent to address your concerns. When you speak, please come to the podium and sign in and then state your name and address for the board. Is there anyone who wishes to address the board at this time? Seeing no one, seeing someone.
My name is Catherine Watson. On occasion, I've substituted in the middle schools and the high school. I haven't for a few years now. I see Mr. Phil Auer at Jefferson Soda Fountain on occasion and talk to him. It's always a good thing to do, enlightening. My question tonight is our history of Oak Ridge being taught in the school system, namely the Manhattan Project, the history of Oak Ridge itself, the reason that we exist as a city? To me, having substituted quite a bit and been a junior high aide in another state, helping teach history and English and remedial education, I just see a great importance of teaching our history to our young people. I think nothing can replace it, really. You've heard the adage time and again, those who do not know their history are doomed to repeat it. The world is a complicated place, and I know that the students are probably learning this through various venues at the high school particularly. I'm not sure of the curriculum. I'm not aware of what is being taught. But having spoken to a few people in the community, it was my concern to ask you as a board tonight, is the history of Oak Ridge being taught in the public schools? I think it's crucial. I really do. We have views politically about the history of our nation, about decisions that were made, but the atomic bomb did end World War II, which was a carnage all over the world, particularly of our fighting men. And I think it's just very important to let our young people know what was at stake then and why Oak Ridge was created and the value. Yes, there was a huge weight on Harry Truman's shoulders to make that decision to bomb those two cities, but it did end World War II. And as a personal note, it probably saved my father's life, who is 95 years old now and a Marine from World War II. They were getting ready to invade Japan when the bomb dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki and ended the war. So I have a personal thank you of a debt to our President Harry Truman and to the city of Oak Ridge, who made that possible. That is my concern tonight.
Thank you. I would just respond, and I might have to call on Mr. Layton to help me with this answer. There was a time in the Oak Ridge schools when Tennessee history was taught, and within the concepts of teaching specifically Tennessee history, there was a segment on Oak Ridge. That's not in the curriculum today. I am aware and do know that throughout different disciplines within our school district, there are certain units that are being presented. And I'll use one at Jefferson with Mr. Dotson and the Ed Westcott pictures that they've used in conjunction there. You want to add to that, if you would, since we've been asked?
Yeah, a lot of the fifth grade curriculum is U.S. history based, so you get into World War II era in fifth grade a lot. And a lot of the Tennessee standards you were referring to, the state standards or the state history, is embedded into those standards. So when you're talking about the large context of World War II, there are mentions of Oak Ridge. As Mr. Philhauer was referencing, we also have done projects at Jefferson Middle School. Last year when I was in the classroom as a social studies teacher, I worked with Jim Dotson, our art teacher. We took some of Mr. Westcott's photos, and what we did is the students painted them in art, recreated them in art. Then they did a little research on the history of Oak Ridge. We looked at the housing, all the, you know, the different letter houses. Actually pulled up a map, which is a phenomenal resource you can get from the historical preservation, and looked at where, you know, a lot of our students still live in those houses, and so they're able to pinpoint that. And then what we did is the students created a script for their painting. They did a short video of that painting and explaining what Mr. Westcott was getting in this picture, what the context of it was. Probably the best example is the real iconic picture of the women on the Calutrons, Calutron girls, which led into a lot of our conversations about women in STEM and how even in the 1940s we had a lot of influence of that and how we want to bring a lot of that influence back now. So to really answer your question, there's not as many state standards in the social studies curriculum as I would prefer as a lifelong Oak Ridger. But I think our teachers do a pretty good job of trying to find ways to connect our city's history, especially as you pointed out, it's one of the most integral parts to the victory in World War II. So I do appreciate you for bringing that up. As a lifelong Oak Ridger myself, I'm very passionate about wanting to get that message across to our students today.
Thank you. Thank you. Right, moving on next is the consent agenda. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Eby, seconded by Ms. Eagle. All those in favor of approving the consent agenda signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries unanimously. Moving on to items for action. The first item, voluntary pre-K grant 2017-2018. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend the approval of the voluntary pre-K grant for 17-18 in the amount of $450,079.
Heard the superintendent's recommendation. Do I hear a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. McLean, seconded by Ms. Marshall. Dr. Borders.
As the board knows, we do this every year at this time, and you have the attachment there that gives the detailed budget of how this would be spent.
Comments or questions from the board? Hearing none, motion. Oh, sorry, Ms. Hagel.
Just a brief comment that this is not the entire funding for the preschool. This is the non-Head Start portion that's a state grant, because as was explained, I think, a couple of times during some of the community meetings in the last month, talking about the new preschool site location, I mean, there may be some confusion as to where the money comes from, and it is partially from Head Start, but partially this grant from the state.
Thank you. Motion on the floor is approval of voluntary pre-K grant 2017-2018. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Next item is Carl Perkins Reserve Funding Application for FY18. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the attached Carl Perkins Reserve Funding Application for FY15.
Per the superintendent's recommendation, do I hear a motion?
Move for approval.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Eby, seconded by Ms. Marshall. Dr. Borchers.
As we've mentioned in the past, Ms. Cross does a great job of accessing these funds, and this is another application to increase that CTE budget.
Comments or questions from the board? Hearing none, the motion on the floor is approval of the Carl Perkins Reserve Funding Application for FY18. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Next item on the agenda, item C, Carl Perkins Basic Funding Application for FY18. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the Carl Perkins Basic Funding Application for FY18.
For the superintendent's recommendation, do I hear a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Marshall, seconded by Ms. Agle. Dr. Borchers.
You can see on the attachment the detailed expenditures that are being proposed. And if any other questions, we have Ms. Cross here if we want to answer any of those.
Questions or comments from the board? Seeing none or hearing none, the motion is approval of the Carl Perkins Basic Funding Application for FY18. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Next, we move to items for information. Item A, financial report. Any questions? Item B, enrollment report. Any questions? Item C, attendance report. Any questions? Item D, 2017 spring intercession report. Mr. Lay, you want to give us a little oversight on that?
Yes, sir, I'd be glad to. First of all, I'm just pleased to report that we had 402 students participate. So that's 402 students that basically receive four half days of additional instruction, one type or the other. We offered 35 activities. If you go back to one of the more impressive areas, let me find it right here. Okay, if you look at the high school, and we sort of touched on this last time, we had a total of 150 high schoolers participate in intercession, and I'm not sure about you, but I have a high schooler. She's a senior, and I think she would have thought personally she was being punished if I would have forced her to go to intercession. So I'm impressed when students that age, because for most students, they're making that decision to be part of that. If you look at the numbers, we had 119 that participated in credit recovery, and that involved 158 courses. So we had the potential for 119 students to avoid having summer school this summer because of credit recovery. So I was quite pleased with that. We had 31 participate in ACT prep. During our superintendent student council committee, we were discussing ACT scores some weeks ago, or one of the meetings, I guess 2 meetings back, 2 months ago. And a young lady shared with me that she scored higher the first time than she did the second time. And normally it's the opposite. You will score higher the second time than the first time. And I asked her, I said, do you know, do you have any thoughts why you scored higher your first time versus your second effort? And she said, I had participated in the ACT prep at the high school during the intercession prior to the first test. She said, I'm confident that is why I scored higher the first time. So our principals are just doing a great job. Another thing they're doing during intercession, in many cases, they're giving a person who basically would like to eventually be a school administrator. They're letting them be in charge of the intercession, so we're letting them get some invaluable experience during that time in basically scheduling and problem solving. But our number one problem, I think our numbers could easily double, and I would probably be seeking more funding for intercession. But transportation, if you'll speak with principals, you know, I'm asking why are we not increasing in numbers? And it goes back to transportation. Sometimes those who need it the most are not able to get there. I'm currently working with Dr. Williams. She has been successful in basically applying and attaining some grants for transportation for afternoons, and we're going to see if we can't possibly get some grant money to provide transportation for intercession next year. And if we can do that, I feel like we'll be that much more successful as far as student numbers. But all in all, excuse me, intercession was just a huge success, and I think just continues to get better.
Comments or questions from the board? Mr. Abey.
Yeah, I mean, I think these numbers are fantastic. 400, you know, you think about how many students are getting either credit recovery, but there's also as many students who are getting enrichment. And I think they're, you know, both being offered. And so anything that we can do, I think this, again, continues to show that this calendar that we have, we'll be looking forward to seeing the continued progress on that. So.
Okay, next, item E, an update on ESG. Dr. Borchers.
The board can find the attached resolution. I sent that last week, and we worked hours and hours on this resolution with our attorneys, not just one, but a couple of them, because we really want to make sure this language is tight and will be able to withstand time of this loan, wherever it might end up being 15, 18, or 20 years, because that's part of our slowdown right now. Is we've had an issue with the EESI loan, that's the Energy Efficient Schools Initiative loan from the state of Tennessee. As you can see there, we originally wanted $5.3 million. We didn't get that in the first round a couple of weeks ago. Discussions are happening. We're hopeful that the first week of May, when they meet again, we can get that back up to $5.3 million, but not so sure about the duration of the loan. We wanted that to be 15, like the other payment for the city would be, but they said they would only go 12 years on that. So that's still up in the air, which obviously changes the numbers you're seeing here in this draft resolution. So this is a draft, so please remember that, because we're not sure term of loan and the amount. If we don't get the 5.3, we most likely will be back around the table discussing the scope of the project and the amount that this city is willing to invest in. But we feel good about the language we have here. We're going back and forth with the city on this draft, but we really are at a standstill until the first week of May at the EESI committee meeting.
Ms. Agle.
Well, one of my concerns, I guess, with this is we had talked about being hopeful that we would be able to use some of the money from energy savings to do some of the capital improvements, like roofs and things, that we have not been able to do. This commits all of our savings for the term of the loans, but I don't see anything in here that guarantees the city's savings over and above will also go to repaying the loans. Are they putting all of the burden on the schools, or will the city participate equally?
Help me here, Karen, but we have, through this whole project, and this is how this works in most districts and communities, you do commit what ESG has said is going to be your energy savings. So that, from the very beginning, has always been, okay, we will, the energy savings that you predict, we will help pay off the loan, but the city has to make some capital investments as part of this process. So we're not going to go through this really awful spreadsheet that we've been looking at for 3 months, but that is part of the reason why the scope of the project has been reduced, because of the amount of a commitment to capital that the city would have to guarantee to make the funding formula work to pay off this loan. So they are committing, and they need to commit at the given value we have. I think we're about $14.9 million at this point. So they do, because we've always said, and that's part of this process, part of our communication was, we don't have a CIP budget. We can't pay any more than what our energy savings would be. So we've been pretty clear about that, and I think that's understood at this point.
But then where does the funding to fix the things that will not be fixed as a part of this process, where will that money come from? Because the roofs will still need to be replaced. The carpeting will still need to be replaced. The other CIP items that are not included in this project will still have to be done.
And that's the discussion we've been having, because this doesn't fix everything. Actually, when we reduce this list, some of those HVAC units came off the list. So we've had that discussion of this is just a piece of, you know, the delayed maintenance problem that we've had, so that we were on fix on failure. This helps, of course, and we'll gladly take the amount that we've been talking about, but we are having those discussions of where we have all these other capital needs, and where is that going to come from, and where is that commitment?
And that's certainly too a question as we, as board members, have contact with members of council. That's a discussion that needs to be held with the council members as well, because they need to have an understanding of exactly if, just exactly, Ms. Eagle, as you said, when this project does occur, that doesn't fix the problems that still need to be fixed. And if we lose sight of this as a fix-all, then when the day comes that the roof needs repairing, then we're back to where we've been before. Somewhere that money has to be found. And it's either, well, it's not either, since we don't have a budget for that. It then goes back to the city to either step up and fix that, or it doesn't get fixed. Mr. Eby. I mean,
isn't that the intent of this, again, continued work to try to get the list of capital equipment items and prioritize that?
Absolutely. Absolutely it is.
And Karen. Really, just to simplify the process, too, regardless of if we did this or not, there would need to be a commitment from the city for capital improvement. But by doing this, it allows us to do more projects quicker and to spend money that we would have spent on utilities. That's a huge part, is that we're going to spend the money anyway. Why not spend it on a project than on a utility bill that's never going to go away? So this just helps us get more done quicker.
And what has to occur, in my opinion, is what Mr. Eby just spoke to, is this has to fall in place, and then the other portion of that, the prioritizing of the capital needs, has to be in place also. To really to address what needs to be addressed and to receive the benefits from doing what we hope will occur. So when you have a chance to speak to your council members, please do so. And if you need some talking points, we can get that to you as well.
Why don't you go ahead and have them send that out to each one of us? That'd be great.
Yeah, let's do that. That would be very helpful if y'all could kind of collaborate and put, don't overwhelm us with talking points, but, you know, some basic things that we need to make sure we get across when we have these discussions. That would be extremely helpful. Ms. McLean.
So with these delays, that would, I assume, mean that we won't be doing a lot of these projects over the summer.
With this last delay, we were already delayed on the major Robertsville project just because of time to order windows to size. With the last delay, we lost the ability to do the chiller piece at Jefferson Middle School, so that they just don't have the turnaround time. So we are taking on some risk because of the delay, but that is one that just fell off this summer list.
All right. Moving on to items for discussion, this night begins, for the board anyway, our official involvement in the budget process. That process began many months ago with the administrative staff. So, Dr. Borchers, I'll turn it over to you.
It has started a long time ago, and we're moving ahead and making some progress. But I'll again, this tonight is just big picture. So I'll turn it to Karen to walk us through parts of this document.
Okay, just looking at it high level as we kick off the budget development process for FY18. In your packet, there's kind of an overview. We've given you some information about the makeup of our staffing, that we are monitoring the current budget and as it relates to building a new budget and as it relates to fund balance. We list there some of the changes that happened in staffing from the approved budget. And we look at enrollment projections going forward, which is really the driver of our staffing. We're looking at a decrease of 36 overall district-wide, with the biggest hit at the middle schools, a total of negative 53. Also an overview of expenditures and the cost for different percentages of salary increases for your information. The retirement rates we lucked out this year. We didn't have any major changes, so that was a good thing. The cost of the step is listed there for you, salary and benefits. And then looking at the revenue side, so far we're a little bit seeing some good trends in the property and sales tax over the previous year, so that's positive. We received our first BEP estimate last week, and it's actually much, much improved over what the state indicated I should start the process with. So that's promising, and it's basically because they have increased the salary component they have a average salary that you have to have at least that average. And so they upped that particular salary component by 4%. And then the district has the option, if you've already met that minimum, whether or not you're going with the full percentage or not. They also have done some improvements to some of the other components of the BEP, and I'll be going to the state fiscal workshop tomorrow and probably getting some more details about those. We, as of yet, do not know what the commitment of the city will be for our allocation from the city, any increase, or if it would be non-recurring as last year. You can see the table there on page 4. It shows that the city transfer as less than the year before, and that's because it was non-recurring, so we go back to what it was before. Then moving on from there, we've got some summaries on the different state and federal grants, specifically the preschool, and then it moves into some federal projects. And on page 7, I call your attention to the Title I grant and just some information about that. Not only is it decreasing for FY18, but there are also some restrictions on how the monies can be spent that will impact our budget. So wanted to call your attention to that. You'll be seeing more information on that later. And then just more information about the various grants we get. Some of them you approved this evening. And then on page 10, we have a fund balance estimate. Shows what we could spend towards FY18 to balance the budget, what will leave us remaining, what it looks like we may be unspent for this year's funds out of salaries and benefits, just to give you an idea of where we are. And then it goes on to some of the departments and initiatives within those departments for the FY18 budget. And then some operational expenditures like electricity, gas, water, and sewer. And actually, since we did this projection, we've had some more information in working with ESG and the city on the whole project. So we'll probably be reducing the electricity a little bit there, maybe down to 2%. So that'll help us out. So it's a work in progress, and this is just where we're starting. Anybody have any questions?
Just a comment, and it's been a year, obviously, since we did this, but this format may have been the same as it was last year or similar. But I think this, I like this, and I appreciate you putting this together like this, because it does, as a starting point, give us some very valuable information as we proceed on down the road. So thank you for putting it together like this. I personally like it that way.
Good, you're welcome.
Comments or questions at this point? Okay. Moving on, any old business? New business? Communications, just a couple of things to point out. Ms. Marshall will be hosting Focus on Education Wednesday.
Actually, we're wait for more information, because we're probably going to push back because there's some special guests we're trying to get to join us. So we're going to work around their schedules and stay tuned.
All right. We'll look forward to that. On May the 3rd, the board will be visiting technology. May the 9th will be a board meeting, our first of several budget-related board meetings, and that will be on May the 9th. This Wednesday at 4 o'clock at the food court at Oak Ridge High School, the Oak Ridge Public Schools Education Foundation will be presenting their grant awards. That's always a highlight of the year for that. And unless someone has something else, I think that probably gets us to where we need to be. Thank everybody for being here, and we are adjourned.